afternoon. You're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, the first big test. Pressure mounts on Leo Varadkar over the appointment of the Attorney General to the Court of Appeal. What should he do about it? Will Mary Mitchell O'Connor be happy to take a super junior role on less pay than her colleagues as Fianna Fáil refuse to back her pay rise? And friends with benefits, is the DUP in Westminster good for the Republic? Mary Lou MacDonald is here. All that to come, but first it's time for the news now with Susan Jackson. Susan, thank you very much and you're very welcome to Saturday with Clare Byrne. Allow me to introduce our panel today. We have Minister for Culture Heather Humphreys, Deputy Leader of Sinn Féin Mary Lou MacDonald TD, Fianna Fáil TD and Spokesperson on Housing and Local Government Barry Cowan, Alison O'Connor, columnist with the Irish Examiner and Kevin Doyle, Irish Independent Political Editor. You're all very welcome. Thank you for joining us today. Barry, I'm going to start with you. You're not surprised, he's nodding, he knew that was going to happen. The appointment of Máire Whelan to the Court of Appeal, Máire Whelan, of course, Attorney General. Fianna Fáil have said this week that this stinks to high heaven. Is that where you're at?
Yeah, we have great difficulty with it and the manner in which it was done, to be quite honest with you. And Micheál Martin flagged it when he spoke on Leo's nomination for Taoiseach. And he expected the government to come back to him with details as to how this arose. You know, and I heard Pascal Donoghue yesterday, I've heard Leo Varadkar say that they adhere to procedures and that they're protected by the Constitution. They might well be, but they have to have regard for the 1995 Act. And they have had little or no regard for it in the way in which they've done this.
So just bring us down to brass tacks. What's the problem? What's your issue with what happened?
First of all, the vacancy wasn't advertised. That being said, a vacancy arose when Judge Sheehan retired. Three High Court judges, were led to believe, expressed an interest. They did so to the Attorney General, as they are obliged to do. The Attorney General is obliged to inform the Minister for Justice. Mm-hmm. Of that, the Minister for Justice is obliged to consult with the Judicial Appointments Board. The Minister for Justice is obliged to inform the Cabinet of the procedure and that the procedure has been adhered to. It appeared she was either not told or told by the Attorney General of the expression of interest of others. I don't know.
I read today that the Minister did know that there were three names.
Well, did she inform the rest of the Cabinet? And if she didn't, why didn't she? If she didn't, why didn't the Cabinet seek confirmation to process and due process and the procedures in relation to 95 had been adhered to? Because those procedures come into place back after the Harry Whelan episode in 1995. And all governments thereafter have had due regard to that. But this one hasn't. This does stink to the high heaven. It does stink to such an extent that it was Enda Kenny's last cabinet meeting. And the prophet of political correctness, Mr. Ross, sitting in the corner, and he had been pacified by the step-aside Garda station, I assume. Then we heard him yesterday saying they want to review. Himself and McGrath, to me, sound like Ted and Dougal at a cabinet meeting, to be quite honest. And it's near time they were held to account.
OK, but you guys say this stings to high heaven, it's in breach of the confidence and supply agreement, and yet you're not going to do anything about it.
Well, I think in the first instance, it's open to the Attorney General, the former Attorney General, whose credentials, whose ability, whose suitability to the job may not be in question. But it should only be done when due process and due diligence is adhered to. And it wasn't adhered to. And I think she should consider her position or consider that nomination and reapply for the position along with the others and allow the Cabinet then make an informed decision,
so
but at least it will be an informed decision. But they're all complicit in this now at this stage. And yes, Jim Callaghan, when he said he was surprised by this and that in itself is a breach of the confidence and supply, that is the case. And it may well be that the two leaders may have to have a discussion about this issue. But in the meantime, we'd like some clarification, we'd like some answers. We need to see who's responsible and what level of responsibility has not been adhered to.
OK, Heather Humphreys, you've heard all of that. You were at the Cabinet meeting. You know more about this than the rest of us about what went on. What do you say to what Barry Cowan says?
Well, in my view, there's two key questions here. First of all, is the candidate qualified? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. And second of all, did the government act properly in appointing her? And the answer to that is yes, we did. The government made this appointment earlier in the week in line with its powers under the Constitution.
Is it not the norm that the Court of Appeal position would be occupied by somebody who was previously a judge, and that there were people, lawyers who had applied or who had put their names forward for that position, and they were rejected because they had never served as a trial judge. Maura Whelan has never been a trial judge.
Well, what I can say to you is that she is eminently qualified, and I don't think anybody disputes that fact. And what I can also confirm is that the Judicial Appointments Board said that they would not be in a position to make a recommendation to the government, and therefore the government took a decision and made the appointment in line with its powers under the Constitution.
And did you know that three High Court judges had expressed interest in applying for that job?
No, I am not privy to that process, nor should I be. What normally happens at Cabinet is that the Minister for Justice brings a recommendation to Cabinet for an appointment, for a judicial appointment, and it
so
is
just the one name.
One name comes for the position that is vacant.
And that person was sitting at that Cabinet table when the name was brought forward.
Well, there was one name brought forward, and there was a unanimous agreement at Cabinet. And this person is absolutely, totally qualified for the job. And the issue here is that there was a vacancy.
And no one said, Attorney General, one second, no one said, Attorney General, maybe you should leave the room while we have this conversation.
Well, obviously, that's that. You know, Cabinet is confidential. I'm not going to go through that. But what I can say is that there was a vacancy. This Maura Whelan was absolutely qualified to do this job, and the vacancy has been filled. And she is eminently qualified for the job.
What about the procedures
and the process
that have been there?
The process under the Constitution was followed.
You're disregarding the 1995 Act.
The process
that a coalition government of which your party was a part of brought in order for there to be no issues like this arrived at, in order for the Cabinet to be above reproach in relation to this issue, so as the Cabinet are fully informed of a process, so as the Judicial Appointments Board are participate in that process, and so as every name that is seeking to be considered for that is considered properly and effectively, and you make a decision thereafter. And then, of course, the AG, if she's as qualified, and I take her word for it, as you claim she is, and I expect that she is, and I don't question her credentials or her professionalism. But nobody has any regard for the three that put their names forward. Nobody has any regard for the responsibility the Minister for Justice had to inform the Cabinet.
But Barry,
the
Constitution does say that the government can appoint whomever it wants to the courts.
It does, but what does the 1995 Act say, Claire, that was brought in by the coalition?
That it needs to go through JAB.
There were certain requirements and procedures and processes to give effect to that right that the Cabinet has and that we don't dispute.
But ultimately, the government can make that appointment.
It's the first time it's been disregarded since it was brought into force. Why is that? Because it was Enda Kenny's last Cabinet meeting. Right. He divvied up a job for this person, and he divvied up a solution for Shane Ross's political correctness by virtue of step. While he was texting the guys to make a banner about step aside Garda station remaining open.
No, I think we better
complicit he and everybody
just
else is in Cabinet.
I just want to be very clear here. The Judicial Appointments Board said that they would not be in a position to make a recommendation to the government.
Why? Did you ask them
that
why?
Was in January.
And therefore, the government took a decision to make the
did
appointment
in
line with
why?
Its
just
powers
just
under the Constitution. So the Judicial Appointment Board did not bring forward a recommendation of any names.
It's a moot point.
That's the fact.
But the three judges had written to the Attorney General.
Well, I'm not privy to that information. But what I do know, the process. And I've sat at the Cabinet for 3 years. The process is the Minister for Justice brings forward a name for a position. We do not sit at Cabinet and discuss whether this person is suitable or whether that person is suitable. That has never happened in 3 years.
And what do you think of Shane Ross kicking up about this now when he let it go through on the day?
Well, it was a unanimous Cabinet decision, and I didn't hear Shane Ross actually, but I understand he wants to raise it at Cabinet on Tuesday, and he's quite entitled to do that.
Should he not have raised it though and voted against it last week?
He's quite entitled to raise it on Tuesday. It was a unanimous decision. And I think what we really have to get back to here is that this that Maura Whelan is eminently qualified for this job. There is a vacancy and she has filled it. And I'm happy that the due process was followed.
I'm feeling sort of a Groundhog Day moment here listening to Heather, because it's very reminiscent of that whole McNulty affair. Do you remember, Heather, when you got landed in it by the former Taoiseach Enda Kenny on that occasion? And if I recall the sequence of events at that time, government insisted that there was nothing to see here, that everything was hunky-dory, that this was not a stroke, but had to reverse from that position. This series of, and let me just say, nobody is questioning Maura Whelan's absolute professionalism or her level of qualifications to go for any senior position, including to sit on the bench. And nobody questions either that it falls to government to make the appointment, but it's not. They can't just set aside the procedures envisaged to make that appointment. They don't have a completely free hand to put the rule book through the shredder. This, to me, was a stroke. And I think they've been caught. And the question for me is, apart from answering all of the questions in terms of the Judicial Appointments Board, like, did the minister communicate with them? Were they made aware that there was expressions of interest? How did they handle all of that and so on? I think all of that needs to be set out very publicly. But the big question for me is, our brand new Taoiseach was also at that cabinet meeting. What did he say? What did he ask? And I'm not suggesting, Heather, so we don't go off in a distraction, that the cabinet would have an in-depth discussion about the merits or otherwise of different candidates for a job. That would not be appropriate. But you do have to check, particularly when the sole name being proposed is sitting at the cabinet table with you. I would have thought it prudent to ensure that all of the procedures had been gone through and to ask that very, very directly. Bear in mind that the reform of judicial appointments is a very hot political topic. This is front and centre in terms of this government's agenda. For the life of me, I cannot understand how Maura Whelan was in the room when that decision was being made. I cannot understand how somebody, including herself, didn't say, best for me to step outside the room as an absolute minimum.
So what happened?
That didn't happen.
Do you agree with Barry that she could and should recuse herself now and apply?
I agree with that. And I think in fairness to her and to her public standing, exactly, because she has been put in a terrible position, albeit that she made a wrong call, in my view, in terms of her presence at the cabinet table. But I think in fairness to her and her professional and public standing, I think the wise course of action would be to recuse herself. But should she do that, we still are left with these questions for government. And I think the Minister for Justice outgoing, Francis Fitzgerald, the incoming person, Charlie Flanagan, but more particularly the Taoiseach, and I raised these matters with him yesterday, we need to see the paper trail. Let's see exactly what happened.
A listener says this is a classic storm in a teacup. Fianna Fáil always appointed their own. Governments have always appointed attorneys to the superior courts. It's ludicrous to suggest she should go outside the door of that cabinet meeting.
As I said to you, they may well have done so, and I can't check the records to verify or deny that. But what I can say to you is 22 years ago, there was an act titled the Courts and Officers Act 1995, which gave a procedure and a process by which that responsibility that cabinet have to make appointments is and are adhered to. And I think it was very disingenuous and somewhat arrogant of the likes of Pascal Donoghue yesterday to disregard that in his commentary and in his response to questions. And it's been done by one or two others since too. But it's near time now they came out and clarified what exactly happened at this meeting. Mm-hmm. As Mary Lou said, in most boardrooms that I'm aware of, if there's a conflict of interest, it's identified,
it's declared,
the person removes themselves from the room.
Absolutely.
That's goes without saying.
But still, I mean,
there's a responsibility on the Minister for Justice.
You do this all the time. You say it's awful, it's awful, it's awful, it's terrible, and then you do nothing about it.
No, what I'm telling you now is, I'm telling you what can be done about it. I think, as I've suggested, the former Attorney General should recuse herself from the position, should apply for the position the same as anybody else who has a right to do so, and allow them to do that and give them the time and space to do it. Allow the present Minister for Justice to make a recommendation and inform the Cabinet that all the due process and diligence has been carried out effectively and properly and to the letter of the law. And the Cabinet then can make its decision.
But Fianna Fáil said things about the Garda Commissioner as well and where she should go. She hasn't gone anywhere, and you're still there.
But if it's such that there's a breach of the confidence and supply, as has been suggested, well, I'm sure the two leaders will arrange to meet to discuss that and discuss the consequences of that and to discuss a rectification of that. And there's no need, to run to the polls here straight away, but there has to be regard for process and
procedure.
I know,
but do you understand that you're starting to sound and say, like the boys who cry wolf?
I'm not sounding like the boy who cry. There's something happened here that shouldn't have happened. It's as simple as that. And every member of that cabinet is as complicit as the other in arriving at the conclusion and the decision that they came to, including the present Taoiseach.
There's a couple of bits clear.
Like, I mean, you had the Chief Whip said she wasn't aware if this was been on the agenda at all.
That's right.
Yeah, well, that's normal now. Things can come into cabinet now, that ministers are not notified about.
That is quite normal. Sensitive. Or consistent here is Minister Ross and his proficiency of political correctness being thrown out the door every time there's a decision to be made.
There is part
of
the narrative, Claire, that's not been told, which is that for the cabinet passed another number of judicial appointments a few weeks ago, and there was a bit of controversy around it. One of them was a guy from Castlebar that had Fine Gael links and Endicenny links as well, and that kind of blew over and passed.
But the authority would have given a list of names.
And that went through that process. But all along in this, there has been a wink and a nod. It's been going around, and the people who stalk the corridors in Leinster House have known for months that this job was earmarked.
This
for
is
Maura
what you
Whelan.
Do, is it?
This
stalking,
was more
stalking.
Yes,
the
yes. This is what we do. But it's been known for months that this job was earmarked for, right? And we hear these conspiracy theories all the time, so you can never actually write them, because how do you stand that up? Oh, Maura Whelan's going to get the Court of Appeal.
So
once
go back
she steps
a little bit.
Down.
So it was known then that Maura Whelan was not going to be the Attorney General under the new leader of Fine Gael.
Yeah, it's long been assumed that whenever Endicenny went, I mean, there was surprise to some extent when she was left as the Attorney General after the general election last year, because she was a Labour appointee back in 2011. And usually it's a political appointment, the AG. So you live and you die with the people that appoint you. With the Labour Party gone, it was always thought that Fine Gael would bring in their own person.
But Endicenny and her
got on pretty well. They had a good relationship, and they'd been through a few tough times, let's be honest, between the various commissions and investigations that took place. So he stuck with her. Fair enough. That's his decision. No big deal there. But it was always taught from that point on that when the new leader came in, whoever it was, whether it was Leo Varadkar or Simon Coveney, that she would be moved on and a Fine Gael appointee, Seamus Wolfe as it turns out to be, would be put in. And that is exactly what has happened. And the conspiracy theory all along was that the Court of Appeal wasn't being filled, wasn't being advertised, because it was going to go to Maura Whelan.
And in recent times, the Attorney General outgoing often went back to private practice.
Yeah, and well, Michael McDougall is the most famous and obvious example of it. There are examples of it there. So to some extent, when Jim O'Callaghan says he was surprised, he mustn't be stalking the corridors of Leinster House, perhaps gossiping, but maybe the fact that she didn't go through the process. I mean, it's amateur hour. How nobody taught to say to her, look, Maura, yeah, that job is yours, no bother. But you know what you have to do? Stick the CV in there. Just make sure we tick all the boxes along the way. And, you know, OK, so the other judges, the High Court judges' names went in. They would have been measured up, and Frances Fitzgerald would have still only brought one name to cabinet. Mm. But she would have been able to say, this has gone through the process.
Or another and cabinet member might have been able to ask her, well, have you gone through the process? Have you had any other applications?
More to the point. And
are
as
you
for
happy with the nomination you're making?
And as for leaving the room, I mean, if you're the secretary of the Tiddlywink Society in Tullamore and they're discussing whether they're going to make you the honorary life president, they put you outside the room while they make that decision. So it's unbelievable that they didn't do that. And when all this legal advice was coming, and various people in government have been quoting legal advice over the last few days, who's the government's legal advisor? The advice comes from the Attorney General's office. So the whole thing's just amateur hour.
But do you know what's really, really, I think for people watching this who are probably more transfixed with the sunshine today than political happenings, but nonetheless, it's a sense of here we go again. So you had the whole high theatre and drama of change, even though the new cabinet is, you know, it's like a game of spot the difference, where you mark out the minor differences from one cabinet to the other. But nonetheless, there was that sense of change and all of this. And then bang, back to reality. Actually, nothing has changed, because there is that culture and attitude that you sort people out. Nod, nod, wink, wink, you sort, you know, you settle matters. And what makes it worse, I think, is the fact that this government has explicitly identified the issue of judicial appointments as something that needs to be reformed and changed and made publicly and democratically
credible. But the person who was to the forefront of that was sitting at the cabinet table.
Yes.
Shane Ross, Alison O'Connor, what do you think of what you've heard?
That effectively what has happened here is the outgoing Taoiseach Endicenny stood at the door of the cabinet room and lobbed in a grenade. And I'd like to know why. And I'd like to know why Leo Varadkar went along with it. I would like to know why, it's been said, why did the cabinet not ask Maura Whelan to excuse herself from the room? We're discussing judges here and judgment. And I think that Maura Whelan herself should have excused herself from the room. And I think that shows poor judgment on her behalf. And as well as hearing from Endicenny, I actually think it's time maybe we heard from her. that if she were going to, you know, recuse herself and then reapply, I think we really do need to know about the, you know, the three nominations, it going to Frances Fitzgerald, why somebody around that table didn't think to... I mean, look,
is there any reason why we couldn't hear from her on it?
It's I don't know.
Not anymore. No, she's an ex-attorney general.
It's kindergarten politics, module one, that this is going to cause trouble, a stroke like this. Mm-hmm. So far... everyone around the table, most of them who've been around the table for quite some time, your antennae would go up and you'd think, okay, this stinks a bit. What's going on here? Leo Varadkar will never have his first week as Taoiseach back over again, and it has been sullied by this. And there's no way that that will now change. And how he chooses to deal with it will very much set the tone for the rest of his time. And I think that saving the minister's presence, it's worth the cabinet realising that repetition of the sentence, nobody more qualified than Maura Whelan, which is not true, actually. That's not to take from her qualifications, but I'm sure the three High Court judges who applied might have an issue with that. That repetition of that statement does not legitimise what they did around the cabinet table. It's very poor politics. Mm-hmm. And it sends out a shockingly bad signal. And I think that Enda Kenny actually... owes it to his government. He did enough damage to the party the way he extended his stepping down over the last 6 months, which ultimately also damaged the governing of the country. And now this is hampering
given
how
the latest
they're conducting
poll results,
themselves.
I'm not sure Fine Gael would agree that they were damaged by, you know, his lengthy goodbye and all of the hoo-ha around the election process.
You know what? Look at how, if you were to do a poll now and people were to have looked at the last 48 hours and listened to this, and you add up then all the, you know, people saying the amount of self-reflection and self-obsession Fine Gael has undergone over the last couple of months, and people might think differently.
Okay. Well, threw in a hand grenade as he left?
I don't agree with that at all. And I think what's important to remember here is that a position was vacant. It was filled by a very, very qualified woman who has spent 6 years at Cabinet.
This is Theresa May-esque, the way this is being repeated, the same things during the campaign.
The point is, a process was followed. It's within the Constitution. And it's important to remember that. And I think that the people that are listening to this programme is that here we have a woman who is capable of doing a job. There was a vacancy. She has been appointed as is set out by the Constitution. And I think that's important to remember.
The Constitution also says that women should stay in the home. You know, there's a far more updated legislation that has been operated off for the last 2 decades.
Could Heather set out the process that was followed?
Do you know, the Judicial Appointments Board, is the Attorney General on that?
The process was...
Is the Attorney General on the Judicial Appointments Board?
Appointments Board could not recommend anybody for that position. They did not recommend anybody for that position.
They can't recommend the Attorney General because it's on the board.
Well, they did not recommend anybody for the position.
On the board.
No, but I want to know what was the process.
And the point is that a memo was brought to Cabinet by the Minister for Justice... and one name was on it, and she was an eminently qualified person. So why would she not get the job?
So
the process was
entitled to be informed that three others had expressed an interest in it?
No, I've never been informed how many others
Whose
were.
Whose responsibility
Kevin,
was that?
Kevin Doyle did say that the Minister for Justice would only ever bring
one name. Yeah.
But I mean, does that mean you're not supposed to stay quiet at Cabinet table?
No.
That's effectively the rest of the Cabinet saying... treat us like mushrooms.
No, that's not
in the dark. And you know
just a second. If an assessment
but
process
Heather, just
has
because
been gone
that's the way you do government doesn't mean that's the way everyone else has to do it.
Sorry, can I just say this? If a process has been gone through, names have been assessed, and one name is brought for one position, it's always the case with every judicial appointment since I came to Cabinet, there was one name for one position. We did not discuss other people's names, and that is
that
the process.
Know,
but the point
to be quite
is
honest,
that
a process
we don't know
associated
whether the three,
with the 95 Act had gone through.
The three High Court judges who put their names forward, we don't know were they ever considered seriously for the job.
Well, I'm sure they were considered seriously. I don't know. Fair. It's up to the Minister for Justice.
That's actually unfair on you and your colleagues.
It's not unfair because why would we sit down and spend a day at Cabinet discussing the merits of this candidate or the other candidate? That's the job of the Minister for Justice to bring a name to Cabinet. And I don't want to get into the business of assessing
Mary Lou, and then we're going to move on.
That's not the way the system is, and you know that.
Sorry. So, Heather, here's the worry then. The worry is that the process to select the successful candidate was the Minister for Justice typing up a memo, with Mary Whelan's name on it and bringing it to cabinet. That's the concern, and that is very serious. And let me reiterate, that's not to take from the woman's qualifications and so on, but that's the worry. And you, as a member of cabinet with collective responsibility, cannot sit here and set out for us the detail of what the process was. We know what it wasn't.
Because no, I told you what the process is. I've explained the process.
Well, no, you haven't. So take us through it. Where did who brought forward Moira's name, and then who adjudicated on her suitability?
I don't get into those details because that's brought to cabinet by the Minister for Justice.
That's shocking, Heather.
It's not
that
shocking.
For example, if I might say it, Claire, Section 3 of the Court and Officers Act 1995 says where the Attorney General wishes to be considered for appointment to judicial office, he or she shall withdraw from any deliberations of the board considering his or her suitability for judicial office. Sure, there it is.
But she didn't apply to the board, Barry, is the problem.
But sure, the board is the cabinet as well. But I mean, it seems
no, it's
now,
not. The
it
judicial
seems now, if a Justice Minister brings
forward,
daren't you question, has the right rules and procedures
so
and processes
behind
here?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
this.
I remember during the McNulty affair, and this is far more serious, I would believe, Simon Coveney saying, acknowledging afterwards how damaging it had been and saying, this is terrible. Everyone thinks now that we're just like Fianna Fáil. You know, and certainly they learnt at the knees of the masters on this, right? But it just is very damaging for politics and how people look on politics. And even to hear a minister like Pascal Donoghue, who one thinks has great integrity and who I think is a very good politician, on the radio defending this yesterday and the first week of a new administration is really very disappointing.
All right, Heather, you wanted to say just
to say that there are new procedures in place for appointments to state boards. I've followed them absolutely, completely, and I think there have been very, very good appointments have been made to the different state boards that I have responsibility for over the last 3 years. And the second point is that there is a judicial appointments legislation, and it has it is proceeding through the Dáil, and that will come
into absolutely no
course.
Credibility now bringing it forward.
Well,
we
can
government.
All discuss it. It's going into the Dáil, and we can all give our opinions on it.
Do you believe, for example, that the Attorney General should inform the public as to who or how many applied for this job or expressed an interest in this job? Do you think the Minister for Justice should inform the public that she did consider three others when she made that decision?
Sure, she's not the Minister for Justice.
I can't speak for the Minister for Justice, and I don't want to get it. That she brought, I was very clear on this, she brought one name to cabinet. Oh. I considered the person she got to be eminently qualified for the job.
All right, well, Mary in Dublin says this is so boring, listening to the endless high moral grandising by the
panel. You're at least in the garden and enjoying the sun as we're
boring
you.
This is a storm in a teacup, for crying out loud. Let it go and get on with more important stuff. We'll do that after this break. Welcome back to Saturday with Clare Byrne. A reminder of our panel, we have Minister Heather Humphreys, Mary Lou MacDonald, Sinn Féin, Barry Cowan, Fianna Fáil, Alison O'Connor from The Examiner and Kevin Doyle from The Independent. And Kevin, I want to start with you on the next issue we want to discuss. Mary Mitchell O'Connor, another problem for Leo Varadkar. He appointed her as a super junior. That position doesn't exist because there are already two super juniors and they are under legislation the max he can have. So we need more legislation in order to pay her the salary that she's owed. What happens now?
Yeah, at the risk of scaring that poor woman in her back garden again, I'll try and dumb down the legislative side of it. But essentially, little known legislation that has existed, it was actually Fianna Fáil who put it in writing, but means you can only have two super juniors. And the way has always been that the chief whip was considered one, and there was always this extra space. So in the past, you've had Jed Nash was there for employment, I think it was for housing. Willie Penrose had it at one stage as well. So essentially, either they didn't spot that you couldn't have a third super junior, or there was some sort of panic when Mary Mitchell was not happy about being demoted. Leo Varadkar tried to give Mary Mitchell O'Connor a soft landing. He was bumping her out of cabinet. She was the only one. And I spoke to several ministers in the build up to the cabinet reshuffle, and they said, you can't demote one person. That'll just seem bad. If you're going to do one, you have to do two. He decided to do one, but he looked for a halfway house to keep her at the cabinet table, but not with the full ministry. And the problem now is that unless legislation passes, which I'm sure Barry is going to tell us in a minute it won't, means that she will effectively be a yellow pack minister for state with rights to sit at the cabinet table, because she'll be paid 16 grand less than her colleagues. And that just doesn't seem, I don't see how that sets a good precedent or a good standard for society at large, that you have ministers.
Well, the nurses and teachers are doing
well, there is well, you could argue that may be the precedent, but so
and she hasn't said, because I saw one report,
strike. Leo wouldn't like that though.
I saw one report today that would say said that she would sit at the table on the lower salary, but I haven't heard that from her. I haven't heard her say that.
I mean, that is the look, it's a little bit like the easiest thing for the government here would be if Maura Whelan was to withdraw her name and go away and apply through the proper process, and if Mary Mitchell O'Connor was to sit in her hands and go, I don't want that money, don't worry about it. But both of that means that the government, in its last appointment under Enda Kenny and its first appointment under Leo Varadkar, has made two hames of it, and are now putting pressure on two women that are going to have to take the fall for them.
I mean, whatever you think about ministerial salaries, you can't have somebody sitting there doing the same job as somebody else on less pay.
Apart from anything else.
Alison, as you were saying, the teachers and the nurses will be listening
to this. Staff rooms, the length and breadth of the country, and in hospital wards.
So you think Mary Mitchell O'Connor should get the extra 16 grand under legislation, Mary Lou?
I tell you, I'm just, and I say this with all due respect, and I do adhere to the notion of equal pay for work of equal value. But I would, it's just such a crazy situation and such a big ask, a road that I cannot travel, to feel sympathy for Mary Mitchell O'Connor in this situation. If it is a thing that the additional super junior was dreamed up to kind of solve a short-term political problem that the Taoiseach had, well, that was very bad judgment, in my view, on his part. That was a stupid thing to do. There will be no easy passage or warm reception for legislation to facilitate additional money for another super junior
well,
minister.
Well, Barry's party have already said it's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, it certainly isn't going to happen, nor should it happen. And the serious point is
weekly
that
weekly whip round, maybe
the people in the real world who provide essential services are left by this government in the lurch in terms of equal pay. And I think apart from the kind of the mess and the hames of it, I think would be quite angry to see all of this playing
apart
out.
Apart from anything, it's not really tenable, Mary Lou. The first thing that will happen is, OK, Mary Mitchell is in charge of higher education. She brings whatever piece of legislation down to the Dáil, and you're going to stand up, or Barry's party is going to stand up and go, they don't even pay you the proper amount,
Kevin,
to do your
Kevin,
job.
Kevin, we haven't clarification yet as to where the book stops in relation to higher education, whether it's Richard Bruton or whether it's Heather Humphreys. We haven't even that yet, so.
Well, we don't even
looks worried.
No,
I'm
culture. Yeah. I'm culture.
Anyway, is that a sigh of relief?
No, it's not. Can I just say, I just want to say that the purpose of a super junior, of course, is so that they can bring their views to cabinet. And in terms of the higher education sector, Mary is eminently qualified. She has a master's degree
back to
in
the
education.
Qualifications again, right?
Just let me finish.
But
let
this
me finish.
Was all done in a rush.
No, we all know it was done in a rush. Okay. Can I just finish, please? What I want to say is she has huge experience after being in the jobs brief for a year. She knows where the skills gaps are. She knows what we need in this country are highly skilled people, and we need to have them upskilled. We need to have them trained.
I think the cabinet
to meet
needs
the
to
demand.
Be upskilled.
Now, and I honestly think that the last thing on Mary Mitchell O'Connor's mind is wages. What she wants to do is get on with the job.
So you
and
think
that's what
that,
people
do you
want
think
us
that
all
somebody
to do,
should
get
sit
on
at
with
that
the job.
Cabinet table on a lesser wage than super junior colleagues? Is that feasible?
It's an honour to sit at the cabinet, and I don't think that the wages is going to be a big issue, to be quite honest with you. As far as Mary's concerned, she wants to do the job. Mm. She's eminent. She has a great interest
she
in education.
She might share your view. I mean, I don't
know.
She's being sent a signal, though, there, isn't she? Very much so.
Well, I don't know, Alison. Actually, she's not been sent a signal. I'm just thinking what I would be thinking in that situation. I haven't been speaking to her about it, but I imagine that her focus is on doing a good job and doing our best for the people of this country, so which is to you know, the higher education sector is a very important
sector.
If
you were in that position as a female super junior, would you take 16,000 less a year than your male counterparts who have the very same job?
The thing about it is, I understand that there's legislation is required. I wasn't aware of that until it was raised. The legislation is required, and I do think there are other more important pieces of legislation that need to go through the Dáil. So I can see Mary will continue on to work for, you know, to do the job, and I have no doubt that she's very anxious to get stuck into that particular brief, because it's a very important one.
And did you know that she was upset about the first offer she was made, which was equality?
No, I don't know anything about that.
Does anybody know?
I remember seeing her, watching her in the Dáil chamber when the vote was going on for Taoiseach. And I have to say, as Mary is normally a fairly sunny disposition, she looked absolutely and utterly cheesed off. Because I remember seeing her face and following her around the chamber on the screen, you know, and thinking, she's got bad news. And what? I actually remember I tweeted at the time. Now, a number of people said to me the next day, what is a super junior? And I'm remembering it was Miriam Lord, I think, who said, wasn't it Pat Rabbit was the first who said you basically get to sit at the high chair in cabinet. And really and truly, it's political expediency. It was introduced in the first instance as a point of political expediency. It was a coalition. It was a way of divvying out positions.
It's been, a worker party's
exactly.
Second seat
it's been
cabinet.
A difficult. It's been a sop, if you like, to have that. Part of me really admires Mary Mitchell O'Connor, that being, as Kevin said, being realising she was the only one to get demoted and digging her heels in and saying, you're not doing this to me. But it has created a really, no more than the...
What does it say about the Taoiseach, though, that he had made a decision to demote her and put her in that portfolio. She said no and he succumbed.
I don't think I need to answer that. It was
an 8-minute meeting that Leo Varadkar and Mary Mitchell O'Connor had initially. So the way it works is...
What time was that, Kevin?
It would have been in that interim before. You wouldn't have seen her, I don't think, The meeting took place, so as Heather knows, you get the call and you go down to the office and you get told you're getting whatever and you say thank you very much. Or in this case, you go, equality, I have absolutely no background in equality. I have nothing that would stand on my CV to say that's the portfolio for me. And she said she was very disappointed with it and he said, leave it with me, effectively. Now, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but she went away and he went through a few more ministers. And in the meantime, calls happened with Richard Bruton and the idea of higher education came up. So when Barry says they don't know who's in charge of higher education, he was right, because by the time it came into the Dáil and Leo Varadkar announced her as the Minister for State with responsibility for higher education, it actually hadn't been outlined what areas of responsibility within that she would actually take charge of. So whether that's the legislation around the universities of technology that's going through, or whether it's around the budgets for the third level institutions, we don't know that yet.
Because I think from memory, his speech referenced Richard Bruton's role in higher education, even though he had given
earlier that he announced that she was getting the super junior. There is the wider issue of that there aren't enough women around the cabinet table, and even looking to Leo Varadkar's inner circle. I know that Alwyn Enright, for instance, was, I believe, advising him during the leadership campaign. But if you were to look at his top tier of advisors, I don't think there's any woman in there. And I think that that's something he should address.
Well, Barry Cowan, why won't you let this female super junior be paid what she's owed?
Well, first of all, we brought in the legislation to cap it at 2. You know, we don't want any more high chairs around the table. It'll begin to look like the creche canteen if it goes on anymore. But, you know, if the Taoiseach or the government expect us to acquiesce to a Fine Gael internal issue following a leadership election within Fine Gael, we're not going to do that.
So you don't care
there was two other junior ministers with this status whom could have been rescinded of their duties if he so wished.
It's all very chaotic, isn't it? It is.
It was very badly handled and poorly judged. And, you know, it's of their own making and we won't be acquiescing. No way will we.
The worrying thing is that these are the people, dear listeners, who make the big decisions that shape and decide the direction. And we're listening all about, you know, Brexit is happening. Big things are happening. Huge things are happening that need clear, decisive leadership. And certainly these are case studies.
Strong and stable leadership, Mary Lou.
Strong and stable, even. Stable and strong. But certainly there's no stability or strength.
I do think it's a good... I think it has...
In evidence in this.
If things calm down and move into that space, I think what he did within the cabinet in terms of Brexit with Simon Coveney having overall charge, that they've almost taken the approach they did to jobs, if you like, that it's going. No, I mean, obviously it depends.
I hope it's not a tokenistic as well.
Yeah, but it didn't sound tokenistic to me the way it is. And I think that it is an impetus that is badly needed. I mean, all the hard Brexit, the soft Brexit, it's been a bonkers Brexit so far because we have no idea what's going on. And you'd have no confidence.
Well prepared for it.
You'd have no...
We're the best prepared country for it.
No, but I'm not talking about us. I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about the UK.
Oh yeah,
and in a way, it doesn't matter how prepared we are. Mm. It's what goes on over there, and I would have slight concerns about. us, did we use all our political capital on, we did very well to get into the main objectives, the North, you know, that if there was reunification.
That was provided from the Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah, but exactly. And I worry about down the road now, did we use up an awful lot of our political capital on that? And that maybe there are other issues that will come up, most certain, the border being the top of those, you know, and how that will impact.
But now that the DUP, and you were over there, I know, Mary Lou, during the week in London, the DUP now are going to put the pressure on, and this is all very strange and new, isn't it, that the DUP might actually do something that helps the Republic in terms of a win on a soft border.
Well, let's hope that the DUP use whatever influence they have for the good. It's not just the North. The island is in this as a whole. So if the North is damaged, it has repercussions for the South and vice versa.
But their wins are good for us, aren't they? If that's what's coming down the track.
Well, just on the basis of the meetings that we have had and at the basis of the meeting with Theresa May on Thursday, I have no sense as of yet that the British system itself has quite decided what Brexit means, except that it means Brexit. Is it hard? Is it soft? What does that amount to?
Can I just stop you there for a second? Because I watched Theresa May's interview last night on Newsnight, and this is in the context of the fire in Grenfell Tower in London. The woman is...
It was excruciating.
It was excruciating. Mm-hmm. She seems to be in a really difficult place. Mm-hmm. She handled that very badly, and we all saw what Jeremy Corbyn did and what she didn't do in not meeting survivors and so on. How was she on Thursday? What's the form? What's the thinking? How's your read
on
it?
Well, I have to say it was my first time meeting Theresa May, so I could only... It's hard to be definitive on the basis of a first meeting, but she is, as she presents herself in media appearances... I believe that this business of sort of, you know, laboriously sticking to the script and repeating the same thing ad nauseum, it might be her form, but I think more to the point, it's because critical decisions have not been made and the politics over there is volatile, it's a mess. The DUP undoubtedly are enjoying their moment in the sun where they're sort of the centre of focus, although let it be said, as British and particularly English opinion ask questions about who are the DUP, it's kind of interesting to see the response when that question is answered for them. I think that we have to see how all of this plays out. We've made it very clear to Theresa May that any arrangement that she might be minded to make with the DUP can't undermine the Good Friday Agreement. Just be conscious of this, that the DUP MPs in Westminster are going to back Theresa May anyhow. I mean, I think there's a danger of overhyping the kind of leverage that they have. They're hardly going to withdraw support from Theresa May and usher in an era of Jeremy Corbyn. That's not going to happen in this lifetime or the next.
They can ask for some wins there too.
And everybody who has any level of influence needs to be asking for things that are beneficial to the island. And I certainly hope that the DUP do that. We meet on Monday. We've work to do to get the institutions up and running again. We had a good meeting with the Taoiseach and with the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney. It was a very, I think, a very constructive exchange. But what we need now is clarity of purpose. There can't be messing, and the type of approach that we've seen with the issue around the AG and the Super Junior and sloppy politics. Sloppy isn't going to cut it in the current political climate.
Yeah.
Who wants to come in here?
I'll just come in here, please. First of all, I was encouraged by the comments from Arlene Foster that she wants a sensible Brexit, a Brexit that's going to work for everyone. And I think that's very important. Of course, when you look at it, Sinn Féin are sitting on the sidelines. And I know historically they had reasons why they didn't take their seats up in Westminster. Things have changed now. We've moved into different space. And I think they are strengthening Theresa May's hand by not taking up their seats in Westminster. But what we need to do is get the institutions back up and working in Northern Ireland. That's the most most important thing? Because the most important thing here are the people in Northern Ireland, because they're going to be impacted hugely.
We are
going to be impacted hugely, yeah, this side of the border. So it's important that there is a voice in Northern Ireland and that the institutions are back up and running, so that what we need to do, and Chief Negotiator Barney has said it very clearly. He says, you have problems. There are issues. Sit down, work together, find the solutions. We have to make this work. I live on the border. I'm right beside it. I don't want to see us going back to a hard border, to the days when we had customs posts. We know what that brings.
But it's
that
less
brings
likely
criminality
now,
and that brings a... Sorry?
It's less likely now because of the DUP, unless we have an election.
Can I just urge a bit of caution,
Barry, just be very careful not to be jumping to very big assumptions. It's game on in terms of what Brexit will look like once the negotiations formally start.
Yeah, Monday.
I don't think anybody should make any lazy assumptions that, you know, wiping the road and say, God, that was close. Thank God it's not going to be a hard border or a hard Brexit. All of these things are so complicated, not least legally, that there's nothing definitive and there's nothing settled. What we have to do collectively is to set our compass in the right direction, the DUP, Sinn Féin, people north and south, and to resolve in common purpose to protect all of our...
Can I just press pause there for a second? Sure. I have an ad break to take and I'm going to do it now so that we get a good shot at this afterwards. So we'll take the break now. Barry Cowan, I hope you can remember what you were going to say, can you?
No, I was only going to say in relation to the power sharing in the north and the fact that it hasn't yet got back up and running, I was glad to see that Leo met with Sinn Féin and the DUP during the week. I would have hoped he might have met the other parties too. I expect he might, or at least consult with them.
You have a few things to talk about, so
you're going to meet him for other reasons and sense of things.
You know, I would just say to all parties to get on with it and get it up and running in order for a unified approach to be taken in relation to the Brexit negotiations, which are fast coming down the track. And it's an all-Ireland consideration when you think of the Good Friday Agreement and everybody's commitment to that process and to power sharing. And I would hope that people recognise their responsibilities in relation to the votes that
have
been cast in their direction.
Remember when Enda Kenny suggested the forum, that we would have this forum, and Arlene said, I'm not going to take part in that. She was very annoyed about it.
Now she's down dancing.
Dancing and smiling in the sunshine.
You know, that is the good thing about the result of the UK election. It has put a real move on things up there. Sinn Féin realised, look, we can't be on the sidelines in everything. You know, we have to. There was a real softening of their position in the days after the election result was made known. So I think that, because I mean, it was politically extraordinary, incredible, daft, that while Brexit was going on, that the executive was not think that it's fascinating to look at that. I mean, if you were a political lecturer, to use the example of Arlene Foster, to go from cash to ash to where she is now. But not only that, the way she has herself copped on, I think, is the only way to describe it, in terms of deciding, I need to change what I'm at, I need to change how I project myself, I need to try and make this work. I think it's going to be really interesting. I mean, Theresa May, again, to come out, wasn't it lad this day last week, that Theresa May came out and said, oh, we've done a deal with the DUP. I mean, mother of God. You know, we need someone like Bertie or Enda to go over and give advice on, you know, confidence and supply. To say that before everything is nailed down, you'd wonder, will the DUP be running?
I think it happened twice.
You run in absolute rings around them, you know. And it actually was quite disturbing to see how little knowledge the press in England, if I could call it that way, knew so little about the DUP. It was quite extraordinary, really.
I think the roller coaster that the DUP have been on is like to go from what was essentially a slap in the face in the Northern Assembly elections back in March to now ruling Britannia essentially by default is really when we talk about all this stuff with Leo and where the whole thing is at, it does kind of show you how quickly politics, and we will move on next week and we won't be talking about Mary Mitchell O'Connor's 16 grand, but it is, if I had to put a fiver on it, Claire, the game of brinksmanship in the north that has been going on since before Sinn Féin called the election, the back and forth and the back and forth, and the fact that this has all happened in the middle of Brexit is absolutely disastrous for the north. And if I had to put a fiver on it, June 28th or June 29th, we will have a power sharing agreement, because they will go up to the bitter end, and then they'll just do it because it has to be done.
Can I say to you, Kevin, I hope that we will have it quicker than that.
And put a fiver on it, Mary Lou.
Just to remind you.
Oh, the last of the big spenders.
The last, yeah.
Don't give us a result before
the reason that the institutions came down were because of the RHI scandal, and that hasn't gone away, you know, to use that phrase. It's still periodically elements of it.
Surely Brexit is more important. I agree with you. There was a scandal and needs investigation.
Yes,
Brexit's
absolutely essential. But the reality is that the institutions to work have to be credible and they have to be clean. And I just remind you, at the time, at the height of the RHI scandal, it wasn't simply that Sinn Féin was put in an impossible position. All of the political parties, society at large in the North agreed that this couldn't continue anymore. The second piece is this, that issues around the language, around the use of the petition of concern and which we've enunciated time and time again, those need to be sorted. That can be sorted in an afternoon if people decide we're going to deliver on what's been agreed. But the die has been cast.
The die has been cast. The vote has been had. As convoluted as it was in this jurisdiction after the last election, it was incumbent on those whom had the duty and the responsibility to put a government together, took the responsibility seriously and allowed for and catered for a government to govern. And we more than ever need that now up there too, to go with what we have down here.
No, of course, nobody's
and you know, you have to remember
that,
also, you know what I mean,
nobody's
the abstentionist policy is being questioned out there amongst the general public in relation to what voice or what value is the votes that are cast in your favour when it comes to forming a government in the UK.
On Westminster, we have no interest.
But you have an interest in collecting the cash.
Hold on. Whatsoever in being part of a British government. Why would we? The objective of our politics, and by the way, it used to be the objective of your politics too.
And it remains
the
objective.
It used to be a constitutional
mission. We're adhering
mission.
To the Good Friday Agreement and to the formation of a power-sharing executive.
Can I just say, for the purposes of clarity, the
really
mathematical
quickly,
clarity of it, Sinn Féin's 7 seats in any event would not be decisive in terms of Theresa May's arrangement with the DUP. That's the mathematics of it. But this isn't a mathematical issue, it's a political call, and we're abstentions.
We have to leave it there. Last word to this listener who says, looks like the next government is a Fianna Fáil Sinn Féin coalition listening to your programme now. Maybe not the last 2 minutes, but there you go. Thank you all very much. We'll let you back out into the sunshine now. Thanks for joining us today. Des Cahill and Joanne Cantwell are up next from 2 p.m. until 9 p.m. tonight with Saturday Sport. Enjoy the sunshine and we'll talk to you next week.
Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. The researcher, Rona Tarrant, and sound supervision was by Mark Dwyer.